Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, October 29th, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me, and today we are continuing our run through previews of what are typically the seven best conferences in college basketball. We've already done the American, the ACC, the Big East, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-12. So the final league that must be discussed is the SEC, which is another conference that seems completely up for grabs. And here's some evidence to support that claim. In the preseason media poll, it was Kentucky who was voted the favorite in the SEC. But my pick is Arkansas. Deadleg's pick is Alabama. And KenPom and Torbert both have Tennessee as their highest-ranked SEC team. So in the Big East, I think the only sensible pick in the preseason is Villanova. And in the Pac-12, there's really no data to support picking anybody other than UCLA in the preseason. But in the SEC, you can reasonably pick one of four different teams at least. Deadleg, I think I've asked you this before, perhaps about the Big Ten. Forgive me. But is the SEC, on second thought, is the SEC the most up-in-the-air power conference in the country? Or do you just expect Nick Saban to win it somehow?
Oh, I never rule out old Nick, for sure. I think that the Big Ten, I'm going to maintain what I said before about the Big Ten. That's going to be the most compelling, best race at the top with the best teams. But if you're looking for the most variety, and you just laid out the evidence why that's going to be the case, the SEC is the league for you. And I very much enjoy this because it's really not often, certainly not every season, where you'll have a power conference where you will have four teams with legitimate cases to be the best team in the league. You can get three. Two is almost a damn near guarantee in every league that's not the Big East in most seasons, and maybe even the Big 12 during Kansas's heyday. But to have four, we're in some rare territory, and I personally love it. I like Alabama coming off of what was statistically, when you consider how good it was in the regular season, getting the two seed and winning the SEC, arguably the best season in program history, even though they didn't make it through to the Final Four or anything, or get it to get on out to the Elite Eight, which it had done previously in program history. I'm going to go with Bama, but I'll hold off on my thought on that for a second there. Why? Not that you're anti-Bama, because you're not, but what made you say it wouldn't be Bama, wouldn't be Kentucky, and made you pick the way you picked in your poll?
Some of this is, all of this is tied to the top 25 and one.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, I started on the night of the championship game, and then I adjust every time it needs adjusting throughout the off season. And so when I am asked to project the SEC, I just say, okay, let's call up version 27.0 of the top 25 and one. And I've got Arkansas 10th in that. Alabama just slightly behind them. Kentucky just slightly behind them. If I'm telling you the truth, though, I don't see much difference between these teams. I've got them in a certain order, just like you got them in a certain order, just like everybody has them in a certain order. But I guess I'm willing to throw Tennessee in there with them. But I really don't see much difference in Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, and my rankings suggest as much. They're all really in the same group. When you break down Alabama, they lost three of their top five scorers. That's not great, but the top two are back, Jaden Shackelford and Javon Quinterly. Shackelford averaged, 14 points, 3.8 rebounds, two steals per game last season. Quinterly, 12.9 points, 3.2 assists, 2.2 rebounds per game. They bring in, to go with that, a top 15 recruiting class, J.D. Davison, a five-star point guard, ranked 12th in the class of 2021. He's a projected first-round tip pick, one and done. And then they added, four-star center, named Charles Bediako, who was ranked 34th in the class of 2021. So that's two really good prospects. Two transfers. Noah Gurley from Furman, 15.4 points per game last season. He was terrific. The other one, Namari Burnett, and he, of course, suffered a torn ACL in the preseason. He's out for the season. So that's not great, mm-hmm. but when you start talking about bringing back the top two scorers, adding a five-star point guard, so you're going to have two primary ball handlers in your backcourt with Quinterly and Davison, and then Noah Gurley from Furman, who's a productive Division I player, I like this team, and I love the style of play. They really guard you, and they launch three-pointers. You know, and it's all by design. That's not just how they played last season. That's how they're going to play under Nate Oates. It's fun, it's modern, and it's effective. And if you told me the Crimson Tide were going to be back-to-back SEC regular season champions, and, because they did this too, back-to-back SEC tournament champions, you know, in Nate Oates' third season, that wouldn't shock me at all. They're good enough to do it, undeniably.
Reason why I went with Alabama, and the margins are very narrow here, they do bring back 12 players on the roster who were on last season's team. So, yes, they lost a couple of important guys. Obviously, NBA, they lost NBA talent on the team. But when you go through the kind of season Bama went through last season, and so many of the guys that were in those practices, on those road trips, going through all the COVID protocols together, I think a lot of that will wind up meeting something big. Quinterly, Shackelford, and Davison are on our top 101 players list. Quinterly came in 14th, Shackelford 60th. He could make us look a little silly. If you told me he was a top 50, top 40 player by the end of the season, I'd 100% believe you. And then little inside behind the scenes, our final four players on the list every single year are 1 through 97 are a collective voting. And then each of us get our own pick for a guy. You went with JD Davison at 98, and you did that as a play, given how he was highly he was rated as a prospect, and the fact that he obviously projects as an NBA player, right, GP?
Yeah, of course. And I was really just protecting us because, like, listen, they played a exhibition last week or earlier this week, maybe the days are all running together. He had 19 points in that game. Like, my concern, if I didn't put him in that spot, was that Alabama is going to win the SEC. He's going to be their best player. And we didn't have him on a list of 101 players. That would seem ridiculous. I was like, he was the most obvious freshman who is two things: playing for a team that's supposed to be great and is a projected lottery pick / first round pick. I just didn't want to leave him off. So I used my spot. I think it was 98 for JD Davison, just because there's a chance he's going to be their best player. He's certainly their best pro prospect.
Yeah. The other reason why I have Bama as high as I do is I had a few coaches tell me that, and in fact, Javon Quinterly should make the huge leap. If Oates fully lets him off the leash, he'll be the player of the year in the league. I don't know if he's going to be that, but I think Javon Quinterly will be the team's best player. Davison will certainly have his own moments. And Shackelford, by the way, is far from a slouch. Again, these are three of the top 100 players in our estimation in the sport. And you mentioned Noah Gurley from Furman. I think he could add some secret sauce there. So if you're a Bama fan, your football team's always great. Your basketball team for much of the past two decades has just been kind of in and out. But this year, like last year, I think you're going to be highly relevant. As for your team, GP, Arkansas, they are, you know, I mentioned on the previous Pac-12 podcast, Eli Betker, who did the research for that ADU study and showed that Dana Altman is by far the most successful coach when it comes to using players who have transferred. Musselman's clearly number two in that. And I remember a year ago, I put Arkansas, which had basically almost turned over its entire roster, I think at like 55 in my 1-3, 57, which it was a year ago. And I was way off on that. Arkansas, as we know, made its first Sweet 16 run in 25 years and got a 3 seed and really just was great. So I rated Arkansas high personally. What will be interesting is how, you know, another, you know, 9 new guys here for Musselman. So how's that going to work? He expertly works the portal. I don't doubt him in that regard. I'm just not going to put him first, and I didn't put him second, and I didn't put him third, but I just do think they're going to be a top 25 team. Devo Davis, JT Note returning in the backcourt is obviously big. You got Chris Likes, who's listed at 5'7", although as a guy who claims to be 5'7", it might be 5'6". I'm feeling like Chris Likes is not 5'7". Would you agree?
I could post Chris Likes up all day long. Guess who? And Jalen Duren, good too.
Okay. Well, good on Duren. But getting Likes in there, he is on. He's the only hog, actually. Shouts to Kyle Boone Strongjaw. He did really push for Devo Davis. It was his highest ranked player who didn't make our top 101 list. But I also love the fact that Likes and then Connor Vanover, who's like 7'3", might have grown to 7'4". You know, they've got a classic, you know, super tall guy, super short guy. I just want to see those two guys on the floor together as much as humanly possible. And the last thing I have here on Arkansas, and take it away if you want and go wherever, I'm really excited for you to watch this team this year. Why would that be?
Why are you excited for me specifically to watch Arkansas?
Yes.
Oh, I couldn't begin to guess.
They're not going to have those wrinkly tarps up anymore. Fans in the stands. You're not going to be, you know, your OCD tendencies are not going to be annoyed when you watch the Hogs on TV when they pull up from the snout maybe right before the half because there's no tarp situation.
Oh, thank God. I actually thought about this the other day because I was watching in advance of our Pac-12 podcast. I was watching Tabellus highlights. You know, I was getting into it, man. And I was reminded of how awesome Arizona's tarps were. They had great tarps. And Arkansas's tarps, they left something to be desired.
Yeah, the inverse situation. Arkansas, really good team, just horrendous tarps. Arizona, just nearly spotless tarp situation last season. Team-wise, take it or leave it, postseason ban. But you've got the Hogs one.
Yeah. It's just to circle back to a point I made earlier. You know, when you're ranking teams in a league, you got to put somebody one, somebody two, somebody three. Obviously.
People don't realize that.
This is something people don't realize. You got to have 68 teams in the tournament. But here's how close they are in the top 25 and one. Arkansas's 10, Alabama's 12, Kentucky's 14. Mm-hmm. They're all right there. And so I went with Arkansas one, just like, you know, Alabama lost three of its top five scorers. Arkansas lost four of its top six. That's from an Elite Eight team. And one of those losses, obviously a big one, the lottery pick Moses Moody, might have heard high school teammate of Caleb Houston.
And Cade Cunningham. Who the hell doesn't know that?
Who doesn't know that? And Scotty Barnes. So, as you mentioned, JD Note back, Devontae Davis back. So those two quality players. Note was the SEC Sixth Man of the Year. Bring back Connor Vanover, Jalen Williams, two rotation players. And then, you know, Chris Likes, he's little, but he scores, boy. He averaged 16.2 points as a sophomore, 15.4 as a junior. Only played two games last season because of an ankle injury. But, like, he gets the ball in the bucket. Yeah. They also add Stanley Amude from South Dakota. That's a 6'6 wing who averaged 21.6 points and 7 rebounds last season. And then they got a transfer from Pitt, Adis Tony, another 6'6 wing, 14.4 points, 5.9 rebounds last season. So if you're trusting Arkansas to be really good again, you're just believing that these productive transfers are going to be productive at Arkansas, and you're trusting Musk to do what he typically does, which is take these guys from different backgrounds and different places and mold them into a quality basketball team very quickly. And obviously, I think he will. I've got him 10th in the country. But there's no doubt. You know, we talked a lot of times over the past few years about that Sweet 16 drought at Arkansas that they broke last season. You know, they had not gone since 1996. And now, you know, based on what Musk has put there, it will not be surprising if they go to the Sweet 16 in back-to-back years.
No, and that would actually be a wonderful story for that local fan base there. We aren't going to get a lot of reasons to watch Arkansas early. The schedule just isn't that enticing overall non-conference-wise, so we'll have to wait and see. Glad we gave them some time here on this pod. We'll have to just see. I mean, they've got K-State and an MTE the week of Thanksgiving, and they could play a high-profile opponent thereafter, but otherwise this is filled up with Gardner-Webb, Mercer, Penn, Central Arkansas, and the like. Inversely, Tennessee, I will see in person at Mohegan Sun when they play Villanova on Saturday, November 20th in the Hall of Fame tip-off event. And how about the Vols? So before we went with our top 101 list on Wednesday, on Tuesday night, we kind of debated and didn't really do anything about whether we were going to tweak the list. And we made minor tweaks, but not too many. But now as I sit here and talk to you, Kennedy Chandler is our only player on our list. He's at 20. I'm all in on him, but... And I had Fulkerson on my personal list, John Fulkerson, who did underperform last season, but he's not there. But when you look at what Tennessee has, Fulkerson, Victor Bailey's back, Josiah Jordan James, they bring in a really good class. As you mentioned before, this is the team that the predictive metrics are saying slightly will be the best in the SEC projection-wise. We're saying only one player on this roster is top 100. We'll see. I want to see the real... John Fulkerson, please stand up. I want to see that happen. I think Josiah Jordan James could be a top 10 player in the league. I think there's certainly the possibility of that. Yeah, but I'm excited to see that they've got another high-level recruiting class in there. And Tennessee remains, if you're a Vols fan, I know they've been a little bit short of what you've wanted. Rick Barnes' big picture has done a really good job. Like, you're relevant again heading into the season. You have another really good class. You're going to have at least another NBA player on this roster. And so because of that, it's just no-brainer. Like, at worst, Tennessee, I think, will be the fourth best team in this league.
I will tell you that I have them fourth on my SEC ballot. And yet when I was going through, because you know these teams, but then you go through and you really start putting it in, you know, in a file. This is what they're bringing back. This is what they're enrolling. What's a starting lineup look like? What's a bench look like? This is the team where I was like, you know what? If I was starting from scratch, I'd have them higher.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be really good. You know, they bring back four of the top seven. I think you named all the ones that matter except for Santiago Vescovi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's four guys in Victor Bailey, Fulkerson, Vescovi, and Josiah Jordan-Jays. That's four guys who average at least 24 minutes per game and at least 8 points per game. Now, they lost, you know, Jaden Springer, Keon Johnson, Yves Pons. So they lost some serious players, but they bring back four guys who have been a part of something really good. And then they enroll two five-stars, you know, Brandon Huntley Hatfield and my little homie from Memphis, Kennedy Chandler. He's going to be terrific. And by the way, that's another reason why I wanted to put JD Davison on the list. You can't have Kennedy Chandler 20th and JD Davison nowhere, you know, like they're like 1-2 point, you know, freshman point guards. But I think he's going to be a terrific, just a winner, just a you know, wins at every, won a Peach Jam title, won a state title, just wins, you know, just makes his team better. You know, he's small. But man, he can get where he wants to get to, and he knows how to run a team. So you probably start, if you're Rick Barnes, Kennedy Chandler, who's a, you know, if he wants to be, I think, a one and done lottery pick point guard. You start him with Santiago Vescovi, Victor Bailey, Josiah Jordan-James, and John Fulkerson. Then you bring Huntley Hatfield off the bench. So you got a five star coming off your bench. And then this is the one everybody forgets about that I think it got a chance to be really good. Justin Powell, transfer from Auburn.
Yeah.
And he only played 10 games last season. He like got a concussion and then it just, you know, I don't know. It was weird, but like he just never came back. But in those 10 games, he was really, really good. You know, averaged 11.7 points, shot 44.2% from three. So you bring in a shooter like that off your bench, that's nice. I think Tennessee is going to be just as good as they were last year, especially, and maybe better, especially if Fulkerson plays the way he played at the end of the season, two seasons ago, as opposed to the way he played last season. Because I remember Rick, even at the end of the season, more or less saying that, you know, that Fulkerson had a disappointing season relative to his own expectations. That was certainly, I mean, I voted John Fulkerson first SEC preseason player of the year last year. I thought he was going to be terrific. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't bad, but he certainly wasn't that. But if he gets back to looking something closer to that, and Kennedy Chandler is what I think he'll be, and the rest of these guys, you know, they are, you know, Victor Bailey's good, Scobie's good, Josiah Jordan-James good. That team's got a chance to be really, really, really good.
I think Chandler, Fulkerson, and Jordan-James, I think they're going to have three. Those guys are going to be spread out first, second, third team, all SEC.
And by the way, let the record show, you can vouch for me on this. In our Slack, when we were saying, hey, let's go through the list, is there anything we were missing? One of the things I said is, do we need more Tennessee players? Because right now we've only got Kennedy Chandler. And I bet you at the end of this year, if we do another list of 101, and we're not, but if we did, we'd have more than one Tennessee player on.
I agree. Let's get to those guys in Lexington here. Last season's Kentucky team had a 360 win percentage. It statistically was the worst season for Kentucky men's basketball since 1926, 1927, okay? One of the worst offenses in the league, obviously, 81st overall in adjusted points per possession per KenPom. Now, the Kentucky vote in the preseason poll doesn't surprise me, them being first, GP. They have so much there that it's... they're irresistible. I remember when we got to the end of last season and we knew that Kentucky was going to change some things about what it was doing, and credit to John Calipari because he has certainly looked at the flaws that he had on that roster and and went to make changes there, made changes on his staff, the whole deal. But I remember thinking, like, this team was just so bad that I can't allow myself to project, no matter almost who they bring in, to have them top 20. But I walked that back because Keon Brooks Jr., 10.3 points, 6.8 boards. He's a very important returning player. Davion Mintz back will be, I think, a very important presence. I think Jacob Toppin will have breakout potential as a returning. But when you look at the transfers, Oscar Tshiebwe has been on campus for a good long while here. I think he is going to be ridiculous. Top 50 player in the nation this year. One of the best rebounders. Could, you know, evolve into an even better you know, rim protector than he already displayed in his really good freshman season before things went awry at WVU. Yeah, Kellen Grady, three-point threat, obviously. Proved it for years at Davidson. Not an elite three-point. I think he's not elite, but he can certainly give it to you in bunches and can be streaky. Sevier Wheeler, transfer from Georgia, who was a really good player for a bad Georgia team, and I don't... Like, I don't have the thing up in front of me. Sevier Wheeler was either first or second team preseason All-SEC, and I got Tshiebwe, Brooks, Ty Washington, who I have to get to, freshman, and I think Grady all being better in the big picture than Wheeler. The point is, there's just so much there that if you want to say Kentucky's the best team, I get it. I also want to see it happen. But I think objectively speaking, when you look at how deep this team is, there's just no argument against it. Kentucky is going to be back in the NCAA tournament. Calipari will have no excuses, barring half of the roster getting season-ending injuries. He will have no excuses, Parrish, not to get his team back into the field. I really like Ty Washington. This is one of the oldest Kentucky teams ever, basically, under Cal. Might be the oldest statistically. So I don't think you're going to have a lot of overwhelming freshman presence, but I do think Ty will be the exception to that. He is on our top 101 list, and I think he will be the one that winds up shining. And I don't know if he'll outshine the likes of Tshiebwe, Brooks, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I've got Kentucky too on my list. I got Bama, then Kentucky, then Tennessee, then Arkansas.
Sevier Wheeler, for what it's worth, did lead the SEC in assists per game last season, mm-hmm. by nearly two assists per game. So we'll see how that translates to playing for a better, presumably a better team at Kentucky, but. I won't be surprised if he's an all-league player. But like every guy you named, I won't be surprised if they're all-league players. I'll tell you what I like about Kentucky next. But first, real quick, check this out.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball. And baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
So I have Kentucky third in the SEC behind Arkansas and Alabama, but you know, don't get it twisted. I really like this team. Again, I've got Arkansas 10, Alabama 12, Kentucky 14th in the top 25 and one. Here's what I like about this team. If you look at that disaster of a team last season, historically bad UK team, what was the problems with it? We talked about this all last season. There were three obvious glaring problems. One, they were too reliant on freshmen. John has shown that he can win with freshmen, but he was relying on too many of them at the same time last season. Second issue was they could not shoot at all. They shot 33.6% from three as a team that ranked 176th. And then the third obvious issue is they had no good point guards. Averaged 19.8. I mean, that was their turnover percentage, 19.8. And that ranked 217th nationally. Well, now look what they got. You got two true point guards and at least three in your starting lineup, probably, who can handle the ball. Sevier Wheeler, true point guard. Ty Washington, point guard. And Kellen Grady can't handle the ball. He could initiate your offense if you wanted to. That solves that problem. Could shoot? Well, now you got Kellen Grady, who maybe isn't great, but he did shoot 38.2% from three last season. This is a guy who averaged at least 17 points per game in four straight seasons at Davidson. There was a time where people were talking about he's the best Davidson NBA prospect since Steph. He's got a chance to play in the NBA. That's cooled off a little bit, but that none of that will stop him from being a great college player. He has been a really good college player. So, and then you bring CJ Frederick off your bench. He shot 47.4% from three last season while playing 24.7 minutes per game at Iowa. So couldn't shoot, added shooting. Didn't have point guards. Now you got the five-star projected lottery pick and the guy who led the SEC in assists per game last season. And two relying on freshmen? Not this year. Four starters are going to be non-freshmen. And I know Oscar Tshiebwe like left West Virginia at a time where he wasn't especially impressive. But the season before, he led them in points and rebounds per game. And that was a West Virginia team that was really, really good. 11.2 points, 9.3 rebounds per game. So if he goes back to being that, and you're trotting out a starting lineup of Sevier Wheeler, Ty Washington, Kellen Grady, Keon Brooks, Oscar Tshiebwe, that's good. You know, it's not going to be as talented as the John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins team. It won't be nearly as talented as the 2015 team. There's not multiple obvious future lottery picks on this team, but this has got a chance to be a really good college basketball team. And since we're playing college basketball, that's not the worst thing in the world.
That's our top four. We disagree on the order. We agree on that chunk. And then I think those are the teams that you expect to make the NCAA tournament and you expect to make it with room to spare to stretch out there. After that, here's the order I have. I've got Auburn in the five hole, Florida at six, and then my 7-8 is flipped from my 1-358 GP because of an injury. I now have Mississippi State 7, LSU 8. I think those eight are the ones that enter this season. Their fan bases can say, they can have a rosy outlook and say, listen, we should be targeting the NCAA tournament. I don't think the SEC is going to be an 8-bid league. I think it's got a really good chance at 6, and then you get to like set the over-under at 6.5 bids maybe.
I'll take the over.
You'll take the over. So you're going to go 7. I think I would as well, but I would sell hard on 8. Getting 8 from a single league is real tough. Before we get into the quick details on each of these teams, again, I go Auburn, Gators, Mississippi State, Tigers at 8. How would you rank those four in order? Because I think, are we in the same boat? Those are your next four?
Yeah, and I've got Auburn 5, Mississippi State 6, Florida 7, LSU 8. But obviously the injury at Auburn with Alan Flanagan is something that perhaps I should have considered a little more. Although, you know, I like what else they got. You know, they bring in KD Johnson from Georgia. He's averaged double figures in the SEC last season. Wendell Green, a transfer from Eastern Kentucky, who averaged 15.8 points, 5 assists per game last season. Five-star big Jabari Smith. And then Walker Kessler, former five-star center, who didn't do much of anything at North Carolina last season. He got caught in a numbers game there. Like, you know, nobody liked to play multiple bigs as much as Roy Williams, but like you can't play four of them. You know, they just had too many bigs and he was sort of the odd man out. He only averaged 8.8 minutes per game. But among the reasons I think he's got a chance to be the breakout player in college basketball, like, you know, most improved from freshman to sophomore year in terms of production. He almost never played 20 minutes a game last season. Mm-hmm. But when he played at least 20 minutes, Walker Kessler averaged 18 points, 10 rebounds, 6 blocks. Small sample size, but when
is that a one-game sample size? Did you say 6 blocks?
Two-game sample size.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
He was blocking shots, boy.
You know, you were going about 57 and a 45 there and thought you might dodge the radar, but I had to pull you over on that small game sample size. That is absurd.
This is a fact, what I'm telling you. When he played at least 20 minutes a game in a game last season, he averaged 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 humiliating blocks per game. Obviously, I don't think he's going to average 18, 10, and 6. But yeah. Could I see 14, 8, and 2? I could see 14, 8, and 2. And if he's 14, 8, and 2, you're in a most improved category.
for sure. He's got a chance to. I got to see it. That's all. I'm a little more skeptical. I think he can be a good player. We'll see. He's not going to necessarily get caught in, as you said, like a numbers game like last year. But
no, he's playing. It's Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith up front.
Right.
That's among the most talented front courts in America.
Yeah.
I'd say if we're starting to list with Drew Timmy, Chet Holmgren, that Walker Kessler, Jabari Smith combo is somewhere pretty close behind them.
Jabari Smith has one and done potential. So he might wind up outshining Walker. And keep in mind this, Alan Flanagan, here's where Auburn has it. Jabari Smith is 44 on our list. Kessler's 65. Flanagan is 86. He is expected to return this season. It's not going to be in November, and it's not going to be before Christmas. He had an Achilles surgery back at the start of September that put him out 12 to 14 months. But if he can get back to somewhere close to where he was last season, like he's one of the best returning scorers in the SEC, then I think you're going to have Auburn close to a top 30 level kind of team. You also have Jalen Williams, a 6'8 sophomore who comes back. So I put him five there. I go Florida at six. My stab at their starting five. You have a Charleston Southern transfer, Flandres Fleming, who I think is going to be like one of the top two or three newcomers in the league. Dude can, he's just he was a wonderful small college player who I think is ready to make an adjustment there. Anthony DeRuggi is back.
That's Flanders with a PH.
That's right. One of the best names in the game. Love him. Love his game. And I think that he's going to be a really good fit for Mike White. Anthony DeRuggi's back. I would expect him to start. Colin Castleton's the best player on the roster. He'll obviously start there. I think Penn State transfer Myron Jones. And then, you know, it might be Brandon McKissick, UMKC transfer there. I don't know. Gators, I think you can safely say it'll be a top 40 team, should be in the NCAA tournament conversation there. I would put Florida ahead of Mississippi State because it's been forever since Mississippi State was relevant. Now, it's got a squad this season, or at least it should. Iverson Molinar, top three guard in the conference. And for Mississippi State to have a player like that, as I wrote in my capsule in the top 101, you know, I understand that, you know, we and hardcore Mississippi State fans and maybe SEC basketball fans know who Molinar is, but most people don't know who this guy is. And he is just a great example of, like, if you enjoy the college game, there are really super talented, high-level, major conference guards that you just might not be aware of that you'd enjoy watching, and Molinar is exactly one of those players. He will be one of the best sophomore guards in the country, and he's going to be benefited this season because Garrison Brooks, whose father has been a coach on the staff of Mississippi State for more than a decade, he's transferred over from UNC, and injecting him into the lineup, he's another top 100 player in the country, it gives Mississippi State its most optimistic outlook going into the season in a long, long time. Add in DJ Jeffries from Memphis. They're going to have injury issues to start. Rocket Watts is going through a hip thing. He's not going to start the season. Tolu Smith, the team center, who played 31 minutes a night a season ago, he's going to be out until at least Thanksgiving because of foot issues. So Mississippi State might be caught in third gear for a little bit, but I think when we look up, it's going to be in the tournament conversation. For sure saying they're going to be in. They're going to be close. And then LSU is the last team. Just real quick on them. They don't have Adam Miller. He's done for the year with a torn ACL. That happened like within the past week. So that losing, I think that's going to kick LSU out of the tournament. I think they're going to be an NIT team. Darius Days is back, and he's on the back end of our top 101. You get Xavier Pinson in from Missouri. I think he'll be a plug-and-play guy. Efton Reed, five-star center, good player. I just don't think... We'll see. Will Wade, for all of his critics and everything we've talked about him, he gets a ton out of his roster always, so I could wind up being wrong here. But I think that they're going to be hovering around that 7, 8, 9 spot because they don't have Adam Miller, who was a transfer from Illinois.
I learned this in your 1 to 358. LSU's won 39 league games past 3 years. It's more than any other SEC team. I agree. The loss of Adam Miller hurts, but bring back Darius Days, add Xavier Pinson, add Efton Reed, the five-star center. It's another nice roster. It's a good enough roster to compete for a tournament berth for Will Wade, who at this point I'm just going to assume is going to coach at LSU until he retires at the age of 74. Mississippi State, I like. You know, this is year 7 for Ben Howland in Starkville. Been to 1 NCAA tournament. Hasn't won an NCAA tournament game. Last time he won an NCAA tournament game was 2011 at UCLA. Last time he went to the Sweet 16, 2008 at UCLA. I think both of those streaks can be snapped this year. I think this will be his best team at Mississippi State since he took the job. And among the reasons is because of the enrollment of Garrison Brooks, who was this time last year preseason ACC player of the year.
I think he'll be better this season than he was last season. He was solid enough last season.
Trivia time. Who was the 2021 ACC player of the year?
Damn you.
This just made me chuckle when I thought about it. You need a hint? Tell me when you need a hint.
Hold on. It wasn't anyone on Virginia. It wasn't anyone on Duke. It wasn't anyone on Carolina. It wasn't Aluma at Virginia Tech. Like, yeah, I need a damn hint.
He has a name straight from the Bible.
This is unbelievable. That's ridiculous. Okay, so, yeah. I know the answer, but I need to know if you got this question lined up at the same time that you got Moses Moody, or if just a warm glow and big smile hit your face when you were doing this research and you thought, you know what, I can ask this dude again the same question and give him the same hint.
Neither is true. Here's the truth. 99% of trivia times are prepared in advance. As I was talking to you about Garrison Brooks being the preseason ACC player of the year, and you were talking about, if we didn't talk about this last season, I thought about it and we should have. And I was like, who was the ACC player of the year? And I couldn't remember. And so while you were talking, I literally just Googled 2021 ACC player of the year. And in big letters, it popped up Moses Wright.
Moses Wright from Georgia Tech, who did not play in Georgia Tech's NCAA tournament game, which it lost to Loyola Chicago on account of COVID protocols. And Moses Wright obviously went on and pursued a pro career. He was a senior last season. And with all due respect to Mrs. he might be the most anonymous ACC player of the year of the past 30 years. Good player, but...
Oh, no, no.
No?
There is one that talked about one time. Was on a last place Virginia Tech team and won ACC player of the year. Oh, man. It's outrageous.
I'm not going to pull the name. I'm not going to pull the name. This would have been like... Would this have been when Seth Greenberg was there?
2013.
Man, give it to me. I can't pull it.
He was a co-ACC player of the year. His name is Eric Green.
Yes, Eric Green. Because I think he was top three nationally in scoring. I'm riffing, but he was up there. How much did he average a game? Do you have his stats right there?
I don't have that in front of me, but I just remember I was researching this one time and I realized that Virginia Tech that year went 4-14 in the ACC, finished dead last behind Clemson. You cannot be the player of the year on the dead last team. That's outrageous. The co-player of the year was on the outright champion.
2013?
Yep.
Was it Virginia?
No, Miami.
Who was good on Miami that year, my man? I don't have it.
His name?
No. No.
His father was a shortstop.
Oh, it's come on now, JP. Played for the Cardinals?
Reds.
Reds. I was picturing red. Oh man, what? I can't believe it's been that long. We're talking Larkin. Larkin.
Shane Larkin.
Shane Larkin. There we go.
Father
yes.
Barry.
Damn, man. How about that? I love our random forays. Eric Green, that year, 25 a game. I don't know where that was nationally, but he was way up there. He might have led the nation. That's why.
I don't care how many points you average a game. If you do it for the worst team in the ACC, you cannot be ACC player of the year.
Fair enough.
It's ridiculous.
That's our top eight.
It's insulting. So the top eight in the SEC should be Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, LSU, Mississippi State in some order. We're going to get to the rest of the league next. But first, let me tell you about Peloton. I have multiple jobs and multiple kids, so getting to the gym regularly isn't always the easiest thing to do. Making time to work out, it can be tough. But with Peloton, you can start building fitness into your routine with thousands of cardio and strength classes that take as little as 15 minutes. And do you realize the original Peloton bike? It's now $400 less. So now's the perfect time to start building the momentum to reach your fitness goals. I'm Gary Parrish, and I swear I'm a Peloton owner. I love it. And what I love is that it's always just right there. Got a spare 20 minutes, a spare hour. I can hop right on, jump in a class, and be pushed by world-class instructors. Sometimes I just ride on a scenic route. Other times I go harder. The community is fabulous, and it really does push you to keep going, even when you feel like you can't keep going. You can ride to certain kinds of music, ride in classes with your favorite instructors. You can pretty much do whatever you want. It's a blast. Whether you are looking for some extra encouragement, structured workouts, or just in the mood to laugh, their instructors are there to bring out your best during each class. And yes, you can get an all-access membership, which covers your entire family for no additional cost. It really is a wonderful deal. And with an endless variety of live and on-demand cycling classes, live and on-demand strength yoga, and stretching classes off the bike, you'll keep coming back for more. Experience motivation like never before with the Peloton bike. Now, $400 less. Just go to onepeloton.com to learn more. That's onepeloton.com. Onepeloton.com. All right, Deadleg, we touched on the perceived top eight, although I should tell you, Jerry Palm does have it as a seven-bid league, and of those eight schools we've mentioned, the one that he doesn't have making it is the Florida Gators. We'll see. So after that eight, you get Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Missouri, South Carolina, Georgia, in some order. I guess let me ask you this. Do you think any of those can surprise and become an NCAA tournament team?
Yes. The only one that I would put any stock into doing it is Ole Miss. Now, and I'll do what I've done in a couple of the previews. I'm going to go reverse order here. So I've got Carolina at the bottom. I think it's a Frank Martin hot seat situation. They bring Keyshawn Bryant back, which was good, but there's not a lot there. I think you can make the case for three. You might even be able to make the case for four teams. It's weird. It's at the top, you can make the case for four teams being the best, and you really might be able to make the case for four teams being the worst. I would have South Carolina last, and then Georgia in that second-to-last spot there. They have five players back from a 14-12 team. There are many people who think Georgia will be the worst. Best returning player is T.J. Horn, who averaged 8.5 points last season. If it goes bad there, I could see a coaching change at South Carolina. And if Georgia's like sub 500, I could see a situation where they make a coaching change with Tom Crean. Has not been able to get that thing rolling. Texas A&M, I have near the bottom of the league. This program was the most ravaged of any power conference program by COVID last season. Played only 18 games. Went more than a month without playing a game and went almost a full month without even a practice. So who the hell knows what this team is going to be? I'm going to set the bar way low. I put them outside my top 100. The team was terrible on offense last season. Buzz Williams has eight new players in. The best is probably returnee 6'5 senior Quentin Jackson. It's a good young recruiting class.
Rampage.
But say it again.
Rampage.
Rampage. There you go. There you go. There's no shortage.
Wouldn't it be awesome if Rampage played for Buzz Williams? Wouldn't that be weird, but also hilarious?
It would be better than weird. That's all I got to say about that. If we want to give him the Rampage nickname, I think we're clear to do that. I don't know if we'll get too much pushback.
What if Rampage and Chuck Liddell both played for basketball for Texas A&M?
Well, I wouldn't have him 12th.
You'd have to move him up.
I'd have no choice.
Toughest team in the league.
There is no shortage of mystery in the bottom half of this conference, and I think that Texas A&M is the most mysterious group of all. Those are the bottom three. The fourth team I would allude to is Scottie Pippen Jr. and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's the only team represented of the six we're talking about here that has a player on our top 101 list. We've got him at 35. That's going to be lower than you'll see people out there. I'm a believer, but I'm not all in on him being like a top 20 player. We'll see. He's good. I think we'll find out if he's good enough to make Vandy competitive. He is fun enough to make them worth watching. We'll see. This team went 9-16 last season. We'll see if he can get to about 500. And then, yes, Ole Miss and Missouri, I guess one of those two. I would lean Ole Miss GP. Missouri doesn't have a lot there. There's just not a lot of there, in my opinion. Kobe Brown, Javon Pickett are back, but they have three players total back on this team. This team made the NCAA tournament last season. Did you know that? Trivia time, yes, no. Did you realize Missouri made the NCAA tournament last season?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
They got off to an incredible start, got ranked, but the computer numbers were never in line with the human rankings. They were never, they could not pull a Colorado and trick the computers ever.
Didn't have a shot.
And then by the end of the year, the computers looked smart.
It was just a classic, oh yeah, that's the 8-9 game and it's already over. Like Missouri was just done. They got beat by Oklahoma and bada bing, bada boom, you're gone. I don't know. To me, they kind of feel like NIT 7 seed ceiling at best. But good news is they're Border Wars back. They're going to play Kansas on December 11th. That'll be at Kansas. But it's been almost a decade since those two programs played, and that's a really cool thing. We'll no doubt be we'll at the very least preview or pick that game once it gets to be time there. But Ole Miss is my pick, GP. I'm not overly confident. They got a little of this, a little of that. No huge names there. Jarkel Joyner is a 6'1 combo guard, the best guy back from a 16-12 team last season. Kermit Davis, who we are both fans of and think that he can do good here. This just, the program's kind of been bobbing up and down, right? Tournament team, NIT, not that good at tournament team in the past 5-6 years. They're my most likely. So I would go Ole Miss, Mizzou, Vandy, A&M, Georgia, South Carolina in that order.
One of the things that I've found interesting about the SEC in recent years is that I think this is the best league of coaches in the country. I mean, 14 schools, an accomplished coach basically everywhere. Jerry Stackhouse being the standout, I mean, the exception. Like, he hasn't done much at the collegiate level. You know, that's not a shot.
Yeah, but he'd kick everyone else's ass in basketball, so whatever.
Yeah, but if they want to play pickup, you know.
It's over.
If Kermit wants to try to guard Jerry Stackhouse. Now,
can we get a Jerry Stackhouse-Tom Crean 1-on-1 battle happening as soon as possible, please?
So, but Jerry, like, had a great reputation in the G League. He worked with the Grizzlies, had a great reputation. So, like, I would, if you ask me, you know, two categories, good coach, bad coach, I'd put Jerry Stackhouse in the good coach. I know some people, like, might push back on that. I'd put him in the good coach category. It hasn't clicked yet. Here's my point. This is a league that is projected to go a certain way, and that certain way has Frank Martin and Tom Crean finishing last and next to last. I mean, you look at these coaches, Nate Oates, Eric Musselman, John Calipari, Rick Barnes, Bruce Pearl, Mike White, Will Wade, Ben Howland, Kermit Davis, Buzz Williams, Jerry Stackhouse, Konzo Martin, Frank Martin, Tom Crean. There's not a bad one in the bunch, but somebody's got to finish last. And at least 5 or 6 of them can't make the NCAA tournament every year. It really puts some of these coaches in difficult spots. Like, this is year 3 for Buzz at A&M. He got Virginia Tech to the NCAA tournament in year 3. Probably not getting Texas A&M to the NCAA tournament in year 3. I mean, he might. I'd never count him out, but it certainly doesn't project that way in the preseason. Frank Martin is a guy who did amazing things at Kansas State and then took South Carolina to the Final Four 2017. Hasn't been back to the NCAA tournament since.
It's his only NCAA tournament appearance with the school.
He's 32-37 in SEC games the past 4 seasons. He's finished 11th or worse in the SEC in 5 of his 9 years at South Carolina, including last season when he finished 12th. And worth noting, probably, if I remember correctly, he has no buyout. If they just want to change coaches after next season, they can change coaches after next season. So that's where that one stands. This is year 4 for Tom Crean at Georgia. He had Marquette in the NCAA tournament in year 3, in the Final 4 in year 4. Had Indiana in the NCAA tournament in year 4. He's finished 10th or worse in the SEC in each of his first 3 seasons at Georgia. Picked to finish dead last this season. I mean, those are 3 big name, accomplished, really good coaches whose programs have either taken a bad turn or programs haven't got off the ground really yet. And that's going to be life for somebody in the SEC, because this is a league where there really aren't any bad coaches, which means good coaches have to finish at the bottom of the league.
It's going to only get more problematic in about 2 years when Texas and Oklahoma join and you've got a 16-team league. And if Porter Moser can do more at Oklahoma like what he did at Loyola Chicago and Beard's got it rolling at Texas, I mean, it's just going to be how it shakes out. Kind of similar to how, you know, SEC, many coaches in the SEC on the football side worth their salt. You know, you're just going to have good coaches that wind up, you know, nowhere near the top 25 conversation at the end of the year, but we'll wait and see. But this is a bulky league, a good league, evidenced by the length of this podcast. If you noticed, or when you downloaded and noticed, all the other league previews have been kind of floating in that 32-37 minute range. We're going on 50 minutes here, but that's because there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Good teams at the top. Again, like, I think worst case scenario for this conference is 6 bids. If you're telling me the SEC gets to the tournament with 5, I'm going to tell you something went majorly, majorly sideways and wrong. That should not be the case this year. I don't think it'll be the best league. I don't even know if it will necessarily be the deepest league, but it's got a really quality top and a really quality middle. I just think the bottom end is where it's going to maybe drag the league down just a bit.
But this is where you could end up getting 7 or 8 is if this is, that's kind of like the, that's kind of a perfect setup for a league. Have some national championship contenders, have some real quality in the middle, and then let the bottom stink and everybody in the top beat up on the bottom. Like don't let your top 8 lose to your bottom 6, hardly ever. That's how you end up with 7, 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. And I think 7, I mean, 5 seems really low to me. I think it's 6 seems low. I think it's 7 or 8. I'd go 7 or 8 SEC teams in the 2022 SEC tournament. I mean, NCAA tournament. 14 SEC teams in the SEC tournament.
I'll take your word for it.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Justin South Carolina. Shouts to Terrence Thomas. Legend, Justin Larnell. Thank you guys and gals for listening once again to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. And if you do it at Apple Podcasts, please make sure to rate it and review it. 5 stars and nice comments. I promise you, I read them. And when they're really, really super sweet, they make me smile. Sometimes I just need to smile. So go there, make me smile, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing. I feel
it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.